Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Ksubas Daf Pei Gimel. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a mark, the Daf Gemara, for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage, and then go to option 2. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the mark, the Daf Gemara, before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today we begin the 9th perek of Maseches Ksubas, Perek HaKosev, and you can see that's at the top of Daf Pei Gimel. Before we begin the actual Mishnah, we glance at the side. We have a Nosei Mivneh heading. We have a triangle that's featured. These triangles highlight Lishonos Shoinim, different expressions. Shebohem HaBal Mesalik Es Atzmo Minichse Ishto, through which the husband removes himself from his wife's properties. Properties that the wife brings into the marriage. And up till now, we've seen extensive discussion concerning the different rights the husband has to those properties. In this Mishnah, we see him trying to remove himself from those rights. The Mishnah: HaKosev Lishto Din Udvorim Ein Li B'Nechosayach. A man writes, and the term writes is something that will occupy the Gemara at the very beginning discussion. Does it mean actually writing or saying? But whatever the case is, he expresses himself in the following language, saying that dinu dvorim, meaning of whatever laws and words, I have nothing to do with your property. That's a literal translation, but it basically means I have no dealings with your properties. Does that have any effectiveness? So we say, not fully. Hareze ochel peres b'chayah. The husband will continue to be allowed to benefit from fruits produced by those properties. V'im meso yorsha, and if his wife dies, he will inherit her. Well, im kein lama kosav lo dinu vorem ein li b'nechosayach. So if he continues to benefit from the fruits, he has inheritance rights. So of what value was this information, was this statement? What was he removing himself from? The Gemara answers, she'im mochra v'nosno kayom. What he has done is he's removed himself from the power that he ordinarily would have had to cancel her sales. In a regular husband-wife relationship, if a wife attempts to sell properties she brought into the marriage, the husband can veto that. Kosav law dinu dvorim ein li b'nechosayach u'b'feroseihem. Here you see an additional word in his removal statement. He adds u'b'feroseihem. What results does that have? Hareze eino yochel peros b'chayah. Here we squiggle under on eino to highlight, to accentuate that. He does not have fruit rights. V'im mesa yorsha. If she dies, though, he will continue to be able to inherit that field. Rebuta omer li'olam oichel peri peros. The Tanakhama spoke about the husband not being allowed to eat the fruits. What about the fruits of the fruits? For example, if the fruits the field produced were used to purchase another piece of property, The fruits produced from that second piece of property would be called peri peros. That's just by way of, our initial thinking of this. The Gemara will ask the question that if Reb Yehuda is essentially a continuation of the Tanakhama and is in agreement that he's not allowed to eat the peros, so that means the peros are gone as far as the husband is concerned. So where would the peri peros come from? That, as I said, will be this a discussion in the Gemara. So as far as Reb Yehuda is concerned, he continues, he will be able to benefit from the peri peros. Ad sheyichtov lo din udvorim ein li b'nechosayach u'b'peroseihem u'b'peri peroseihem ad olam. Unless he writes this expression, which is fairly inclusive. He removes himself from the properties, the peros and the perusim, peri perusim, ad olam, forever. The Gemara itself will look into this lengthy expression and say, are all the terms really needed in order to be effective? Chosav law, a husband says to his wife, he writes to his wife, Ein li, divin dvorim ein li b'nechosayach, u'beperosayin, u'beperi perosayin, b'chayayach, u'vemoseich. So he removes himself from the properties and the fruits, and he indicates during her lifetime and after her death. Well, what are the results of that? Eino oichel peros b'chayeha, v'meisa eino yorsha. And here you see the nuance, the new point, and that is that if she dies during his lifetime, the husband will not inherit her. Rav Shimon ben Gamliel loimer im meisa yoroshena. On regarding that second point, Rav Shmuel argues and says that if she dies during his lifetime, he will inherit her. Because he is making a condition against that which is in the Torah. The Torah says that a husband shall inherit his wife. Now, that's of course, if you take this literally, that means that Yerushas Habal, the husband's inheritance of his wife, is a Torah provision. And a person cannot make conditions against Torah provisions. The cholamasta mashikosu b'Torah tano batel. Anyone who tries to make a condition against that which the Torah states, his condition is void. On the side of the Gemara, we have a nosei topic heading: Mosai Amrinon de loshon dinu dvarim toifes u'Mosai Amrinon de lo omar klum. When do we say that this expression, the dinu dvarim expression, takes hold, and when is it tantamount to nothing? The Gemara, Toni Rebbe Chiya. Rebbe Chiya is the author of Tanaic sources that we call Brises. Rebbe Chiya, in his source, he writes, he says, Ha'oimer Lishto. He doesn't use the expression Ha'koisev. What does that difference indicate? That indicates that you don't have to have an actual text written indicating the husband's removal, but speech alone is sufficient. Speech alone is sufficient without any kinyan, without any act of transaction, or without any writing. The Gemara continues, V'chi kosav lohoch, even if he writes it out, and certainly if he just speaks it out, my Havi, so what? What value is there? V'ho Tanya. We have a Tanaic source that features a field owned by partners. Ha'omer l'chaver, one says to the other, Dinu dvarim ein li al sodezu, v'ein li esek ba, v'yodi mesulekes heimena. All kinds of expressions that indicate someone is removing himself from his share in the field. Loi omar klum. None of these expressions work because you're lacking what we call a loshon matona. Loshon matona. Matona is a gift, an expression indicating that A is giving to B. So if you don't have that kind of expression that indicates a giving over of, all that we have here are expressions of the party is removing himself from. That's not something that has, we'll say, legal import at this point. So just saying I'm removing myself from, that's ineffective. So how can our Mishnah describe that same expression as having halachic value? The Gemara answers, Amri debei Rabbianai, b'koisev lo v'oida arusa k'derav kahana. It's not as we suggested that the expression has no value. It depends when it is used. So that our Mishnah describes a man who hasn't consummated his marriage yet with her. They're married, but only at the first stage, the Erusin stage. And it's at that point that he uses this removal expression, and it works based on Rav Kahana's teaching. Dom Rav Kahana, Nachlo Habol Liodom Mimokom Acher. we'll call it an inheritance that is not through strict, let's say, the demise of a benefactor that's in the chain of inheritance. In other words, a father dying, leaving properties. That's a Torah-sanctioned benefactor that dies, leaving property for his heirs. But there is another kind of nachla. That's a nachla lohabol lo'adom mimokamachir. Rashi says mimokamachir she'eno yerushas avoisov. Something that's not an inheritance from his forebears. Elo al yedei maisov tavolo. But as a result of his doing, an action of his doing something, kegon nachlas ishto abol le'adei nisuin shelo. A person inherits his wife, but it's because he did an act of marrying her. That's anachlo habomi mokom acher. Tohel mishum takanto didei tikun rabbonon, because of for his benefit, the rabbis established it. V'hu bo limchol aleha, and he's coming to forfeit it, to forego it. Mochel, he's able to do so. Uched Rav Huna, in accordance with Rav Huna. So we continue with this halacha that's kind of a step-by-step halacha till it's concretized, because we didn't see Rav Huna's name mentioned yet. The Gemara will get to it. So we continue back in the Gemara. Rav Kana says that a nachla habol le'odom mimokom acher, odom masnel le'o, a person can state a condition, shelo yiroshena, that and through that condition, he will not inherit it. Uched Rava, based on Rava's teaching, Yom Rava. Ha'oimer, a person who says, "I efshi betakonas chachomim kegon zu." Person says, "I can't. It's not good. I don't want this takona. I don't want this enactment to work. This enactment that was made on my behalf to work on my behalf. In other words, I don't want it. I forfeit it. Kegon zu." We'll explain that expression shortly. Shoymin lo. We listen to him. My kegon zu. What is meant by that? What Rava is referring to a particular enactment. What enactment is he referring to? Kid Rav Huna, Omar Rav. The Omar Rav Huna, Omar Rav. Yecholo isha shetoymar labaylo. A woman can tell her husband, "Eini nizonis v'eini oisa." I don't want your support, and I will. And as a result of that, I am not going to provide you with my income. So with this, we'll say this halachic construction in mind, that a person can forfeit benefits that were enacted for him, that is a reality. Now, it was pointed out in the name of the Bei Reb Yanai that works when she's still an arusa. The Gemara asks, "I hachi afilu nesuanami." So why does it say only at the first stage of marriage? Why not after marriage, after a total marriage as well? Omar Abaye Nisua Yodoi Kiyoda. Rav Omar Yodo Adifa Miyoda. Abaye and Rava, for our sugya, believe it or not, are in agreement. There is a difference between Abaye's statement and Rava's statement. The Gemara says, "Nafkamina l'shemeres yavam." The difference between Abaye and Rava has bearings in Maseches Yavamos. We're not going to get into that now, but there is a manifestation of the difference, but not regarding the idea or the power of removal. What do Abaye and Rava have in common? And that is that after Nisuin, the husband is an equal to the wife. He is like a partner in the nechosim, in her properties. So we saw before that when you're a partner in properties, you need to have a stronger language than simply one's removal from. You'd have to have a language indicating, "I am giving over to," a loshen matona. Before we continue in the Gemara, we glance at the side. We have a tat nosei, a subtopic heading, which reads, "Lefi ha dekotoni delo amar klum ma yehe im konu miyodo." According to what we've said till now, is that in a case of a husband and wife, let us say, that are nisuim, or in a case of partners, shutfim, where the expression din udvorim is meaningless, What would happen if they do a kinyan, a transaction gesture? Kinyan, the most popular form of kinyan, when you see the term kinyan alone in isolation, it would be the, we'll call the handkerchief exchange, a kinyan sudar. It's a gesture that indicates, in general, it indicates the confirmation or the establishment of a legal transaction, or possibly a legal change of status. So the Gemara asks, Ibayalaho. And Rashi, by the way, he focuses this question on the Brisa above, which had to do with the field, as we mentioned, the field owned by partners, where the expression din udvarim ein li al sodazu was ineffective. The question here is konu miyado mahu. Let us say a kinyan was done as well. Omar Rav Yosef, we have two approaches. Rav Yosef says it's basically meaningless. Midin udvarim konu miyado. That you made a kinyan, you made a kinyan on that which you said. You said something that's ineffective. The kinyan does not add to the effectiveness of something which at its base is ineffective. Rav Nachman Omar, migufa shel karka konu miyado. Rav Nachman says it is effective, that the kinyan is relevant or focused on the actual property itself. Omar Abaye, mistabro milsa de Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef's point is most likely, the Gemara continues at the top of Omid Beis, be'orer. Avo be'oimed migufa shel karka konu miyado. This is an example, as there are many examples, that a Gemara without the Rashi is simply a closed book. So we look at Rashi at the top, be'orer. Kishebo chavero zeh lehachzik b'chelko. We had two partners, and one of them originally said dinu dvarim ein li b'sadezu, and in our case, and he made a kinyan. The second partner comes to take over the part that was controlled by the original partner. Miyad omad v'irir al hamatona v'yomar. The partner, the original fellow who claimed he was removing himself and made a kinyan, he automatically starts to protest and saying, Lo nosati locho es hasodeh. Udin edvor be'almo marti loch, shelo orivi moch. I didn't give you my holding in the field that I said din udvorim mainly. That was just to keep you quiet so that we shouldn't argue with one another. I try to give you a good feeling just to keep you quiet. But I wasn't serious. So in a case like that, the case of Orer literally means to, he comes to protest. But it's a protest with the implication that it's an immediate protest. Then the kinyan that accompany the dinu dvarim statement is in effect, the kinyan was worthless, and the original fellow maintains his ownership of half the property. Avol be'oimed. Rashi goes on. Avol be'oimed yoyim o yoyimayim v'achakach irer lo. If there was a dinu dvarim statement, a kinyan made, and the partner that said dinu dvarim didn't speak up for a day, for 2 days. And the achakach era, and then afterwards he started to protest. Lo, then his protest will not be effective, and the kinyan that he made would be good. The hashtahu de kohodabe. Oh, right now he decided to back out. Vilumdu l'ton kach, and people told him, well, why don't you say whatever words of protest that he said. The Gemara goes on the second line from the top. Omar ameimar hilchasa migufa shokarka konu miyado. Ameimar rules like Rav Nachman, which would seem to say that a kinyan is always effective. You see, what Abaye had done, Abaye had come to explain Rav Yosef's position, but Amemar is paskening, is ruling like Rav Nachman, that the kinyan makes the din udvarim statement effective. Now the Gemara clarifies what we just suggested. Is our suggestion true? Omar le Rav Ashi le Amimar. You just said Migufa Shokaka Kono Miyado Ba'orer o Ba'omeid. Is it even in a case where the protest is immediate or only after a day or two lapsed and then the protest was heard? Lamai Nafkamina, what practical difference does that make? L'chadar Rav Yosef, as we saw in Abaye's explanation of Rav Yosef, namely, that if it's effective only in the case of Ba'oimed, but in the case of Orer, Kinyan wouldn't be effective, then you would be ruling essentially like Rav Yosef, following Abaye's analysis. Omar Le, Amemar responds, Lo Shmia Li, Klomar Lo Sviro Li. I didn't hear it, which really means I don't hold from it. Meaning, I don't hold from the Rav Yosef Abaye analysis, which, with the result being that under all circumstances, the Kinyan is effective. Even if immediately following the Dinu Dvorim with the Kinyan, we heard a protest. Too late. You made a Kinyan, so you cannot back out. Im Kain Lomo Kosav Law, the Dinu Dvorim, we saw this in the Mishnah. If the language was ineffective, then for what benefit did it have? So the Mishnah said it had benefit. She mochru v'nosna kayim, by saying dinu dvorim b'nochasayach, though he continues to eat the fruits, though he would inherit her if she dies in his lifetime, what he does forego is the right to veto her sales. So before we go on in the Gemara, we glance at the side. We have a nosei mivneh heading. We have a double underline. You can see a couple of them in the next couple lines. The heading on the side reads, the double underline is used to highlight the expression v'teimo le or v'eimo. Tainos shehi eino yecholo litong. We're going to present claims that she cannot make. V'lomar lebailo, claims that would have said to her husband, shistalakto midvar machem, that you removed yourself from other things. In our Mishnah, we saw that the dinu dvorim was ineffective in removing in his removal from the peros and from inheriting her, but it did remove him from the veto rights. Maybe the dinu dvorim should have been effective to remove him from some, one of the other things mentioned, and not the veto rights. So how is it that the Mishnah concluded that it's the veto rights that the dinu dvorim expression is effective for, and not the other things? And we say the dinu dvorim means dinu dvorim ein li b'nechosach, the first example of the Mishnah. So the Gemara asks, v'teimole, once you see that the Dinu Dvorim Eini B'Nechosech has some power, it does cancel his veto of her sales, why not say Mikol Mili Slikas Nafshoch? Why can't she say to him, V'teimole means let the wife say to the husband, you have removed yourself from everything. Omar Abaye. You see we have a house marking on the side of the Gemara where we feature this marking, and we've written Hezbeirom Shel Abaye V'Rav Ashi Lomahi Lo Yecholo Litoin Hochi. Both Abaye and later Rav Ashi will explain why she cannot say this. So Abaye says, Omar Abaye Yad Bal Hashtar Al Hatachtoina. Literally, the hand or the power of the man of the one owning the shtar is on the is he has he she has the lower she has the we'll call the underhand or the lower hand. What do we mean by that? The lesser power. That's too much to call literal explanation. But if we look in Rashi, on the upper part of the narrow lines, the third narrow line, Yad Bala Shtar La Tachtoinu Kol Hamotzi Shtar Al Hamuchsuk Bedovar. if we'll say that A is in possession of something and B produces a document challenging A's possession of, but A is currently in possession of it. So one who produces a shtar against someone that's holding onto something, ma shemefurush b'shtar yochol libo alav, that which is stated explicitly or clearly in the document, so you can collect that. V'mashtar sosum, if the shtar, if this contract or this document is vague, sosum means it's not clearly spelled out. Moridim oisay lepochos she b'mashmois hashtar, and we entitle the shtar holder to receive, but the least of the different possibilities. V'kan habal bo b'takonas chachomim al nichsi ishto b'shloish advarim. We have a husband that is considered in possession of the wife's property with regard to three matters: lechol peros, v'lirash, and v'im timkor michro botel, to eat the fruits, to inherit the property, and to veto her sales. Vizu, the woman, the wife, motzia olav shtar shekosafdali, she produces a document in which is written dinu dvorim ein li b'nechosayach v'loshim siluk hu ze. It's an expression of removal from. For who yochol liton, and the husband can say vaday loshim siluku avolo nistalakti elu mipochas shebedvorim. Yes, I removed from something, but I removed from myself from the least of the items. Vizu hi hamechira, and this has to do with the veto rights of the mechira. Avol kol zman shelo timko, but as long as you don't sell the property, ochal peros, I will continue eating the fruits. So the Gemara had suggested, and just to review what we have seen, the Gemara suggested, let the woman say to her husband, once you've written an expression of removal, you have moved yourself from everything. Abaye says, the woman is coming with a shtar, the shtar of Dinu Dvorim Einim L'Chosayach, but the shtar enables her, since it's not explicit what he was removing himself, it enables her to lay claim on the husband's expression only with regard to the least of the rights. And what did we say is the least of the rights? The right to veto the sales. But he maintains or he retains the rights to the fruits and the rights of inheritance. The Gemara asks, V'yema miperi, you, a moment ago we said that the least of the powers that the husband may have had was veto rights of her sales. Maybe it's fruit eating, that's the least of the things, and not the veto rights. Omar Abaye. Abaye answers, Butsina tov mikora. This is an expression that roughly translates, roughly means, one bird in the hand is better than two in the bush. On a more literal level, a butsina is a type of vegetation that's a young form, a premature form of a kora. If a person comes to you and offers you, take the butsina. In Rashi, you see a more contemporary expression, a dalas. We don't like to, in Gemara markings, we don't like to translate food items and animals and several and other type things that we don't have a strong tradition on. So whatever it is, it's sufficient for us to say a dalas, a young dalas, is better than an adult one, which is a kora, a glas gedoilas, Rashi says. So if you have someone that makes an offer to you, take the small one right now. If you want to give me money for the glas, you could take the small one now, or wait till it gets big later on. Our advice is, take the small one now, because you don't know what is going to be in a month from now. So too, when it comes to the husband and the wife and his association with the properties, it's better for him to enjoy that which he has right now, the rights to the fruits, which is a constant thing and it's an immediate thing, as opposed to her sales, which isn't now. She hasn't sold anything yet. It'll have significance if she decides to sell, but she might never decide to sell. So that the the less desirable of the rights is the veto. The more desirable, the better thing is the rights to the fruits. Hence, we said he foregoes through the dinu dvarim, amiable staff expression, the least of the rights. Let's continue in the Gemara. The aim on Yerusha. Maybe it's the, instead of saying the veto rights of sales, it's the right to inherit. That's the least of things. And why? It's also an issue of doubt. Maybe she won't die in his life. Maybe he'll outlive her. But and on the other hand, as far as Mechira, that he doesn't forego. Maybe she'll sell and he'll lose out eating the fruits, which he's doing right now. So the Gemara answers, Omar Abaye, Misa Shricha Mechira Lo Shricha. Relatively speaking, Misa, the death, is more common. There's a 50% chance, we'll say, without knowing any medical facts, there's a 50% chance here that she might die in his lifetime, and he would have the chance to inherit her. The chances that she's going to sell are remote. They're low, it's uncommon. And therefore, there's no real need for him to have a right to veto, to cancel, to void something that is not to be expected in the first place. Rashi adds a detail here. Why do we say that mechiras lo shchicha? Because a woman doesn't want to part with properties that she received from her father. Rashi calls, he says, she'eini sheroitzelim ka b'nichsei beis avia. The beis avia expression reminds us of the concept of shvach beis avia, which in the past we have explained as being related to the concept of something having sentimental value. We continue in the Gemara, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, li'oilom hu oichel peiri peiros. Tonu Rabbanon, elu hein peiros, v'elu hein peiri peiros. What is meant by peros, and what is meant by the expression peri peros? Hechnisa lo karka v'yosta peros. A woman brings in a piece of land to the marriage, and the land produces fruits. Hare hein peros. Those are the peros. Mochar peros v'lokach meam karka. If the peros were sold, and with the proceeds from that sale, he purchased a piece of land, the Osta Peros, and that purchased piece of land produces fruits, Hare Hein Peri Peros. That is the fruit of the fruit, the purchased piece of land being considered the first generation of fruit. The Gemara asks, within Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yehuda said that a man who used the expression of din udvorim ein liben chosach ube perosam, we saw in the Mishnah that according to Rabbi Yehuda, he's entitled to the peri peros. What does Rabbi Yehuda really mean? Ibay Elohu, Rabbi Yehuda, peri peros dafka, odilmo ad oilom dafka, odilmo travayu dafka. When we learned the Mishnah, we indicated that the expression that was used by Rabbi Yehuda, that he still has peri peros rights until he writes an elaborate expression, namely din udvarim ein liben chosach uveperosem uveperi perosem ad olam, which expression will be binding in order for him to remove himself from the peri peros as well. And that's what the Gemara just presented in a three-stage or three-possibility question. This is not a very common Gemara form where you have an O Dilma twice within one question. That means you have possibility A, possibility B, and possibility C. We should point out the issue lasts a number of lines, and you can see that we have a under the Nosei Mivneh heading, the triangles that appear, Shlavim, these represent stages, Lahavin Shitas Rabbi Yehuda by Mishnah, Eze Mishpat Ma'akib Bilashono. So we're going to go through, we raise the question, which language is absolutely necessary in for the expression of removal to be effective according to Rabbi Yehuda? Before we continue, by the way, we should look in Rashi on the lower third of the page. Peri Peros Dafka. Bahai Lishna Luchud Sagi Listuluki Mi Peri Peros. Umi Peri De Peri Peros. Is it so that with this expression, if a person would say, Dinu dvorim ein li b'nechoseich u'b'perosan u'b'peri perosehem, would that be enough to remove him from the second generation of fruits and the third generation of fruits, and you don't really need him to add ad oilom? V'kosav b'perosehem ad olam v'lo kosav b'peri peros lo istalik mi'peri peros. Had he written that dinu dvorim ein li b'nechoseich u'b'perosehem ad olam, that would not have been effective in removing him from the Peri Peros. So that is essentially our question. We go back to the Gemara. Im Timtza Lomar, if we're reading from the first triangle, if you say Peri Peros Dafka, that in order to have him removed from the Peri Peros, you've got to spell that out. Well, ad oilom lomali, then why would he add the superfluous expression of ad oilom? The Gemara answers, we can tell you why he would do that. Ha komash malon, kevan de kosav law, peri peros. Once he writes peri peros, which is the binding expression, keman de kosav law ad oilom domi. It's as if he wrote ad oilom, but not that he needs to have ad oilom there. V'intim tzolomar ad oilom dafka. And if you say that that is the binding expression, and you don't really need to have peri peros, if he would say, dinu dvorim ein li b'nechoseich ad olam, that would be enough. Why then do you need the expression of peri peros? Ha komash malon. What the Mishnah would be telling us, what it means is, afagav de kosav law peri peros, even if he would have written peri peros, e kosav law ad olam in, e lo lo. Only if he writes ad olam will he be, will that be an effective removal. Without that, it would not be effective. Ve'im timtzilomar travayhu dafka, and if you say, no, you really need to have peri peros and ad olam. Tarti lomali. So then, why do I need both? In other words, what would I have thought had I had only one of them? So we answer, tzricha, di'i kosav lo peri peros v'lo kosav lo ad olam, had just peri peros been written without ad olam, havi amino, peri peros hu dolo ochil, avo piro de peri peros ochil. I would have thought that by removing yourself from peri peros without stating ad olam, that you're disqualifying or removing yourself from the second generation of fruits, but not from the third generation of fruits. Therefore, in order for him to be removed from all generations of fruits, he has to have ad olam. V'i kosav lo ad olam, v'lo kosav lo peri peros. And had he written just ad olam and not peri peros, havi amino, I would have thought that l'oilam aperos koi. That, let's go over the expression that would have been. He would have said, dinu dvorim ein li b'nechoseich u'b'perosam ad olam. I would have thought the ad olam means he's removing himself from the first generation of fruits forever. That from those, he'll never benefit. But from a subsequent generation of fruits, that he would benefit from. Just to go over that point again, what I would have thought is that he's saying, I'm not going to eat these fruits ever. But to take those fruits, the first generation of fruits, and buy a piece of land from which other fruits would be produced, had he had just ad olam without the peri peros, I would have thought that he'd be entitled to those second generation of fruits. Lahachi itzdurich peri peros. And for that, because of that, we need to have the peri peros along with the ad olam. So this Gemara basically raised the possibility and doesn't really come to a conclusion. All it did is it raised the possibility and that which expression is truly effective, and if that be the case, why was the other expression mentioned at all in the Mishnah? Before we continue in the Gemara, we have a Nosei Mivneh heading on the side. You can see we featured a trapezoid or volcano shape, which we call a ma'akav, an attempt to keep track of a give-and-take style of Gemara. So with the narrow part facing up, that represents a she'elah, or a, say the raising of a problem. The inverted direction, tshuva, is a response. Yesh l'ha'ir sheha she'elah nisheres. We want to point out that this question remains. It's interesting that this will be similar to the structure of the Gemara before, where a question had been raised within Rabbi Yehuda, but we didn't see a response. Similarly here, we're going to raise a question, and the response is not going to be forthcoming. Ma yehei im kosav din udvorem ein li b'nechosayich ubeperi perosehem v'lo hizkir b'feroseihem. And the word, the perosim, which is a reference to the first generation of fruits, was left out. In the previous question, we had preserved that. In other words, din utvorim ein li b'nechosayich ubeperoseihem. The question was, what about the need for both of the continued expressions, Peru Perusam and Ad Olam? But here we're going to be asking what would be if the initial Perusam was left out. Ibayalaho, Kosav law, Dinu Dvorim, Ein Li Benechosayach, Ube Peru Perusam. Mahu Sheyochal Peros. Can he continue to benefit from the Peros? Miperi peros solik nafshe, miperi lo solik nafshe, by saying just dinu dvorim eini b'nechosayach ubeperi perosem, is he removing himself just from the second generation of produce and not from the first generation of dumo? Mikol mili solik nafshe. Maybe he is in effect removing himself from all of them. The Gemara attempts to answer. It says, "Pshita de mikol mili solik nafshe." It's obvious that he's removing himself from everything. De'i amris miperi peros solik nafshe, miperi lo solik nafshe. That he's removing himself from the second generation, but not from the first generation of peros. What does that mean, he's not removing himself from the first generation? It means he's going to eat the first generation of peros. Well, gevon da'achlinu le'peros, once he's consumed the first generation of peros, peri peros me'echa, where would the peri peros come from? What did we say before was peri peros? Peri peros is where a person did not eat the first generation of fruits. He took them and exchanged them or sold them for land, and from that land there was produced peri peros. So in order to get the peri peros, you have to have not consumed the peros themselves, the first generation. But if you're saying that he has not removed himself from benefiting from the peros, you would have no situation of peri peros coming about. So therefore, when he says he is removing himself from, as the Lashon was, Tinu Dvorim Ein Li B'Nechosayach Ube Peri Peros, that he's removing himself from the Peri Peros, that means their Peri Peros came to be, and he is not going to benefit from them. How did they come to be? Because he didn't benefit from the Peri's first generation either. So hence the Gemara says it's obvious that he's removing himself from the first generation as well. Gemara rejects that and says, Ulatamech, according to your reasoning, Ha'atisnan, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, li'oilam hu oichel peiri peiros v'chulei. In our Mishnah we saw, Rabbi Yehuda saying that he's always entitled to peiri peiros, unless he writes, dinudvorim eini b'nechosayach, ube peiri peirosam aloilam. By writing, for example, that he's removing himself from nechosayach and peirosayim, in contrast to the Tanakama, Rabbi Yehuda came in and said, by saying Uperosehem, he doesn't remove himself from the Peri Peros. So the statement of Rabbi Yehuda then would have been understood, Kevon Dachaltinu the Peri, once he has eaten the Peros, then Peri Peros Mehecha. According to Rabbi Yehuda, if he were to write dinu dvorim ein li b'nechosayach uba peirosehem, so he is not removing himself from the peiri peiros. How can Rabbi Yehuda say that li'olam oichel peiri peiros if he has already eaten the peiros? So how are we to understand Rabbi Yehuda? Ela b'dishayra, where true he was able to eat the peiros, but he didn't eat them all up. He left over, and from the leftover, he bought a piece of land, and that land produced the peiri peiros. And that's what Rabbi Yehuda would be referring to when he says in the Mishnah, "Olam oichel peiri peiros." So even if he hasn't removed himself from the peiros and has consumed them, he didn't consume all of them, leaving the possibility of producing peiri peiros, and he would be eating from those as well, unless he uses the full expression. So just like in order to understand Rabbi Yehuda, we have to say b'dishayra, hachonami b'dishayra. So too, in our case, with regard to the chachomim, or in regard to our question, you would have to say that it's talking about a case of b'dishayra. So that you can't say that it's pshita, that it's obvious he has removed himself from everything, that he has removed himself from the peros. No, he didn't remove himself from the peros. If he had said, dilu dvorim ein li b'nechosayach u'b'peiri peros, it might very well be that he is removing himself only from the peiri peros and not from the peros. And you'll ask, if he didn't remove himself from the peros, how can you come to peiri peros to begin with? The answer is, b'dishayra, though he had rights to the peros, he didn't consume them fully. He left over some, giving room for this very possibility. So, as we indicated earlier, the original question of a person who says, dinu dvorim, ein li b'nechosayach u'b'peiri peros, leaving out the peros, what ramifications does that language or that version have regarding the peiros themselves? That remains unanswered. Rabbon Shimon ben Gamliel Oimer. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel appeared in the Mishnah saying, Yimeso Yiroshena mitnei shemasna mashikosu batura. That even though he may have made a statement of removal from her properties and said, "Bechayayich uvemoseich, I'm removing myself from your properties while you're alive and after you die," though the Tanakhama said that that's effective in removing the husband from being able to inherit her, according to Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, it's not effective and he will inherit anyway, because he is making a condition against that which the Torah provides for. That's called Masne Amashikosuv BaTorah. Now we turn to the Gemara, and we read, Omar Rav, Halocha k'Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, Veloi Mita'amei. It's a kind of an an unclear and abstract statement. He says, we follow the ruling of Rav Shlomo Leal, but not because of his reason. So the Gemara asks, my halacha of Shlomo Leal v'lo mitame? What do you mean by that? You see diamonds, and on the side of the Gemara, under our Nosei Mivneh heading, the diamonds represent shlavim. They're stages. L'havin, hod yama rav, halacha of Shlomo Leal v'lo mitame. What does Shlomo mean by that? So just take an overview, a bird's eye view of this Gemara. You'll have to have Daf Pei Dalet Omid Aleph in front of you, and you'll notice that these diamonds continue down the upper quarter of the Pei Dalet Omid Aleph, four stages before we can understand what he meant. E Lema, we first stage, if you say, Halochav Shum Leal Diomar Imesa Yurashena, that Rav agrees that if the woman dies in the husband's lifetime, the husband will inherit her, even though he had removed himself from her properties. V'lav mitame, but not for the same reason Rav Shlomo gave. D'il Rav Shlomo Leal Sovar, Ramasal, Mashiach Batura Tano Botel, Rav Shlomo Leal holds that conditions that you make against that which is in the Torah are void. V'rav Sovar Tano Kayam, and Rav holds that if you make a condition against something provided for by the Torah, your condition will remain. The Kosovar, however, Rav holds, Yerushas Abal Durabonon, the power of a husband to inherit his wife is rabbinic. The Chachomim Asu Chizuk L'Divrayim Yoshim Mishal Torah. And the Chachomim, when it comes to their rulings, they increase the power to their rulings more than the way we treat Torah law. So that when it comes to Torah law, Rav would tell you, unlike Rav Shlomo Leal, that the Tanai is standing. You can make a Tanai against the Torah law. But when it comes to rabbinic law, there you cannot. You can't make a condition against the rabbinic law because they made their laws stronger than the Torah laws, at least in this sense. The Rashi gives us a little bit of background to Shitas Rav according to this suggestion that Rav would be saying that Masna Masha Kosuf Batura, the Tanai is standing. You have to think about there a minute for that a minute. The Torah says one thing, I come along and can make in condition that states the otherwise. So Rashi adds, second line from the bottom, Rav Sovar Tano Kayam. And that has a Tanaic basis. Rebbe Yehuda, because you can't have Rav just arguing with a Tana. Rav is not a Tana in the classic sense of the word, and he'd come and argue with Rav Shlomo Leal. Rav has, though, another Tanaic basis, and that's what Rashi points out. Like Rebbe Yehuda, do Amar Gabi Mekadish Yisrael Isha Manas She'ein Lo Cholai She'eksus V'yoyna. A man marries a woman and stipulates that I marry you on condition that I do not have to provide for you the things that the Torah wants me to provide. And what are the provisions that a man must provide for his wife? Share ksus viona. Share will just translate as being a food, ksus, clothing, and ona, conjugal relations. So Rav Yehuda says, b'dover shebemomo t'no kayam, with the exception of oino, which has to do with conjugal relations, when it comes to the food and clothing, which are monetary matters, he can make a stipulation. Even the Torah expected the man to provide that for his wife, you can stipulate that marriage will not include that. In other words, that you will not provide those things, and on those conditions you're marrying her. So v'hocha mayirushena, why then would Rav agree that you can, that the husband, though he removed himself, will still inherit her? And after saying that Yerushas Habal, the inheritance of a husband, is rabbinic, the Chachomim imposed strength to their rulings that the husband shall inherit the wife, and that will resist or be resilient to conditions that he may impose on that. And that's why Rav would agree with the law of Rav Shlomo Leal that the husband will inherit, but for a different reason. The Gemara continues at the top of Pei Dalet Amud Aleph with a question. The Savar Rav Tano Kayam. Would Rav say that a man who's Masna Amasha Kosev B'Torah, when it comes to a Torah law, that his stipulation is effective, that he can make a ruling against what the Torah says? And here we're dealing once again within the realm of monetary matters, and let's see what Rav holds. I know we saw the Tana Rabbi Yehuda says that you can make a stipulation in monetary matters which would counter the Torah's expectation, but does Rav agree with that? Rav says, in a case of a person who says to his friend, I'm selling you something, I'm selling you an item, and I'm going to charge you a certain amount of money, and al menas she'ein l'cholayo no. I'm selling this on condition that you don't come to me with a claim that I have overcharged you. In other words, there's an item has a certain market value, and I intend to charge you. I intend to charge you a price. You might discover that it's more than the market value by a significant increase. The deal is going to be binding, and you're not going to come to me with claims of oina. Rav Omar Yesh Loi Olav Oina. Rav says, even though you stipulated that the purchaser will not be able to come of claims of ona, your stipulation falls away. Your tenai, your condition is batel, is void, because you were masna mashal kusabator. The Torah says that you shall not overcharge by too much, and if you do, you've got to either call the deal off or return the money, whatever the case may be. But the Torah says one thing, you cannot make stipulations against the Torah's expectations. So that right there, you see the question. We have a bracketed section because we want to de-emphasize Shmuel's position. It's not important for right now because we're focusing on Rav. But nevertheless, in the brackets of Shmuel Omar, Ein Lo Olovano, the condition that he makes stands in that case. So we don't have an explanation yet for what did Rav mean when he says the halacha is like Rav Shlomo, but not mitame, not because of his reason. Ella, stage two, halacha Rav Shlomo diomar hamas na mashikosu b'torah tano botel. The halacha follows that one can make a condition against that which that one who makes a condition against that which the Torah provides for, the condition is void. V'lav mitame. Not for the same reason. The Ilu Rav Shlomo Liel Sovar Mesa Yerushena. Rav Shlomo Liel holds that when a woman dies in the husband's lifetime, the husband will inherit her. For Rav Sovar Mesa Lo Yerushena, and Rav will say when she dies in his lifetime, the husband does not inherit her. The Gemara asks, this doesn't make any sense though. The presentation you just made was mitame v'lo kihil chesehu. You were setting up Rav as agreeing with the reasoning of Rav Shlomo Liel, but not with the ruling of Rav Shlomo Liel. So we're not looking for that, though. We're looking for Rav holding the halacha like Rav Shlomo Liel, but for different reasoning. So to say what you just did in diamond number two, you're saying that Rav agrees with the reasoning of Rav Shlomo Liel concerning Masna Mashikos Sabat Torah, but disagrees with his final ruling. Ella halacha Rav Shlomo Liel diomar yemesi yoshen. Rav will agree with the final ruling of Shlomo Liel that if a woman dies in her husband's lifetime, the husband will inherit her, but not for the same reason. Deilu Shlomo Liel sovar bedoraisa tano batel ha bederabonon tano kayam. The Rav sovar afilu bederabonon tano batel. Rav Shimon Liel holds that in Torah-type laws, the stipulations or conditions that he makes against the Torah will be void, but in rabbinic laws, the Tanai will have effectiveness. And that would be so if a man, let's say, made a Tanai not to eat the fruits of his wife's field. For Rav, Afilu B'Drabonon Tano Botel. Rav would go we'll say differently than Shulam Liel. Technically speaking, Rav will go further, that not only in derises are the conditions you make against Torah rulings void, but even against rabbinic rulings, the conditions you make against them will be void. Well, the Gemara is not happy with this third presentation either. Hai kita'ame ukehilchasehu v'rav moisifu. Rav, in effect, is in total agreement with Rav Shlomo Liel's basic halacha, namely, im meisa yiroshena, if the woman dies in the husband's lifetime, the husband will inherit her. And he agrees with Rav Shlomo Liel's tanai, or I should say ta'amei, his explanation that you can't make conditions against Torah provisions. Rav just goes a step further. He says that even in rabbinic rulings, you can't make stipulations against their rabbinic rulings. So Rav is moisif. He's adding to Rav Shimon ben Gamliel. He's going a step further. But to portray Rav, if you say like number three as lav mitame, that's not accurate. Ela halacha k'Rav Shimon Liel diomar yemesi yoshena. Rav agrees with the halacha Shimon Liel that if a woman dies in the husband's lifetime, the husband will inherit her. V'lav mitame, but not for the same reason. The ilu Rav Shimon Liel sovar yerushas habal doraisa. The cholamasne amashikosu b'torah tano potel. Rav Shimon Liel says the husband will inherit her anyway because the husband's inheritance to his wife's properties is a Torah level provision, and you can't make conditions to the contrary of a Torah provision. Rav Sovar Yerushas Habal Derabonan. Rav, once again, he agreed that the husband will inherit. But why? First of all, because Yerushas Habal is of rabbinic origin. The Chachomim Osu Chizuk L'Divrayim Kishel Torah. And the Chachomim made their rulings like Torah-level rulings. And just like in Torah-level rulings, the condition that counters the Torah would be void, so too in rabbinic matters, the Torah, the condition that one would make would be void. So, just to review the last point, and this is what seems to be accepted, that when Rav says, the halacha follows from Shulam Liel, the basic law, the bottom line, husband will inherit her anyway, even if he made a condition. But why will the condition be void? Rav Shmuel says, because your condition is countering a Torah provision. According to Rav, it's a different reason, because your condition is countering a rabbinic provision. The Gemara raises a question. You notice this is a long question. V'sova Rav Yerushas Habal D'Rabbanan. Does Rav really hold that the husband's rights of inheritance to his wife's property is merely rabbinic? V'hotanan, Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka Oimer, Hayoyresh is Ishto, Yachzir, Livnei, Mishpocha, V'yanake, Lo, Minadomim. This last phrase, Yanake, Lo, Minadomim, we're going to wait for the Gemara to explain that later on. So let's not worry about that. Literally, it means it'll subtract from the money, but it doesn't have meaning for us right now. What we do have to focus on is Rabbi Yochanan Broka's teaching that a man who inherits from his wife, when the Yovel year comes, he has to return the property to his wife's family. That's Yachzir Livnei Mishpocha. Just a word about Yovel before going on in the Gemara. The Jubilee year, when, as every 50 years, during the time of the Beis HaMikdash, the practice was that every 50 years, all properties purchased during that time would go back to the original owner. The original owner is someone who is attached to the land because his father had owned the land. And his father got it from his father, going back to the distribution of land in the time of Yoshua, in the time of Joshua, during the conquest and distribution of the land amongst the different tribes. So any land purchased during the Yovel period is returned to, when the Yovel year comes, the 50th year arrives, it's returned to its original owner. Rabbi Yochanan Merocha says that a man who inherits from his wife, so it's returned to her family. We continue in the Gemara. We ask, my Kosovar, what is his opinion? I Kosovar Yerushas Habal Doraisa, a husband's inheritance of his wife is a Torah level provision. Amai Yachzir, why does he have to return the property to her family? Yerusha, in general, inheritance does not go back, isn't returned in the Yovel time. Inheritance, by definition, means you are now the owner, having received it from someone who had previously owned it through his inheriting it, and going all the way back to the time of Yoshua. V'i derabonon, if Yerushas Habal is derabonon, meaning midoraisa, a husband doesn't really inherit his wife, so we can understand the fields have to go back to the real original owners. Domim my avidetai. What's the payment of inakilomin adomim? The Omar Rav, and here we dash on the line Rav, because this is the focus of our questions. Shitas Rav. Rav says the oilim kosovar Yerushas Habal doraisa. Rav explains that Rabbi Yochanan Broka will tell you that the husband's rights to inherit is a Torah level provision. And then the issue is, so why in Yovel is he returning it? Ukigon shahu rishoso ishto beis hakvoras. His wife owned property that included, and specifically, she owned her family's graveyard. There's a concept even to this day in some places. You see family plots. So she owned her family's plots when she died. So the husband inherits that piece of real estate. Happens to be graveyard real estate, but that's what the husband owns. Now the husband is as far as his wife's family, he's an outsider. He married the wife, but her family, he's an outsider. And as a result of that, mishum pegam mishpocha omu rabbonon lishkol domi v'lahader. For the sake of preserving family honor. You see, her family would be, we'll say, disgraced or shamed that their family plot is owned by some other guy, by her, by someone who married into that family. So in order to preserve the family dignity, that's pegam mishpocha, pegam, it has to do with shame, so in order to avoid their shame, or as we say, preserve their dignity, the rabbi said, you know, what you inherited from your wife, give it back to her family and take money, take a cash equivalent for that. So you're inheriting the value of the property. And take money, that's lishkol domi, v'lahadir, and return the family plot to her family. Umay yenake lohen min adomim. What does this subtraction from the money mean? So, just for sake of simplicity and round numbers, the family plot was worth $100. So, it's saying here, you give them back the family plot, and you get back a certain amount of money, $100 less something, less $10. So why? Answer, Deme Kever Ishto. Amongst that, in that family plot was also the spot in which the man's own wife would be buried. A man is obligated to bury his wife. He has to pay out of pocket for her burial. So that's not something he can expect her family to compensate him for. Kidisanya. And here we have a Tanaic source that bears that out. Hamocher kivoroi v'derech kivoroi ma'amodo mokum hespedo. A person who sells his grave and the path to his grave, and the ma'amodo is an area around in the vicinity of the graveyard where the mourners would be consoled, and the mokum hespedo, it's a spot where the eulogies were made. So one who sells this his grave to some outsider, Boin b'nei mishpocha v'kivrin oisai bal korcho. The family members of that seller, they will come and when that seller dies, they'll put that body of the body of the seller into that grave that he sold against the will of the purchaser, mishum pegam ishbocha, because of this idea of preserving the family's dignity. You can't have an outsider owning a part or certainly all of some other family's grave plots. So at the end of this discussion, what do we see? We've dashed underlined the main point, and that is Rav holds that the husband's inheritance of wife's properties is deoraisa. And that's why we have the question going down till this point. Before, we had presented Rav as holding, when he was explaining, when we were explaining before that the halacha that Rav holds like Rosh Gamliel, but not for the same reason, in presenting that, we said that Rav holds that Yerushas HaBaal is derabbanan. But here in this discussion, where Rav came to explain Rabbi Yochanan Broka, we see something to the effect of Rav being associated with the Yerushas HaBaal being deraisa. The Gemara answers, Rav letame de Rabbi Yochanan Broka komar. When you saw Rav most recently, where we dashed under our Rav and the word Doraisa, that's where Rav was coming to explain the opinion of Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka that we had in the framed Tanaic source. But that doesn't mean that that's Rav's own opinion. He's explaining that particular Tana's way of thinking. Valei lo svirale. Rav himself doesn't hold. Rather, he holds that Yerushas HaBaal is Derabbanan, as we had said earlier when we presented our fourth diamond in explanation of Rav's original statement that the halacha follows Rav Shimon Gamliel, but v'lav mitame. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.